Everyone's asleep. Everyone but me. And I can't help feel like I'm doing this all by myself.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from New Zealand, the fabulously fluoridated capital of Auckland. It's the island chained nation in the sunny slave South Pacific. And it's also Fukushima irradiated, which is good because everybody now can get a part-time job as an incandescent light bulb. I was supposed to have commonly known as Dom on here for 2 hours to give us a report on Bilderberg, but because I was making myself breakfast before coming on the show, he has now decided that it's not worth his time because I didn't send him the links to the show ahead of time. What a dick. All right, commonly known as Dom, you're a dick. It's just that simple. Right, moving on. Let me just make sure they block. Thank you. All right, good. He's blocked. Now I never have to deal with them again. See, this is what you do, ladies and gentlemen. If somebody's a douchebag, just block them so you don't have to deal with their douchebaggery anymore. I mean, it's just that simple, isn't it? Okay. Well, considering my guest and all my plans for the show have just been fracked up, I'm going to open the caller line. So, ladies and gentlemen, the caller number is 218-339-8525. That's 218-339-8525 if you have anything to talk about. We were going to be talking about Bilderberg, but yeah, I haven't been following it at all. Interestingly enough, haven't seen a single video about Bilderberg or nothing. Nothing. I think that's it's almost like pretty bad of me, isn't it? All right. So I've got the New Zealand Herald open now, just looking through the headlines. Now, I don't know how anybody else manages to read mainstream media and give a frack about it. I mean, look at these boring headlines. OCR left unchanged. Oh, the official cash rates left unchanged. How freaking exciting. Father relives Christmas tragedy. Oh, great. A single person somewhere having some description of tragedy. How interesting for the entire fracking country. You know, it's just when you've got a small country and there ain't a whole lot going on, you can imagine how poor the news is, which is interesting because the New Zealand Herald mostly copies its news from Reuters and so on and so forth. All right. Let's go to see their copied articles, eh? Because everything else in here is just boring. Boring. Okay. Schools about more than passing exams. Here we go. And here's an interesting one. Opinion poll, how to not be a dick on Trade Me. That's funny. All right. by Peter O'Connor, Ministry's national standards exercise is not visionary. It's more about failure than success, writes Peter O'Connor. The release of national standards data this week has been a meaningless exercise. The continued variation between classrooms, schools and regions makes the Ministry report pointless. The data tells us nothing of the true value and worth of what happens in classrooms on a daily basis. It is, however, part and parcel of an agenda that will continue to undermine public education. Now, these people don't get it, Mr. Peter O'Connor. You don't get it, do you? Agenda 21, it's meant to dumb all the kids down. That's what all these national standards are about. It's to make sure that all the standards are lowered. It's to lower the bar to have some very, very stupid people in your country. Okay? That's basically what's going on here. I had, what was I talking about? I had an inkling the other day of just how bad education is getting. And I was just thinking, man, high school, that really sucked. like if the classroom didn't suck and was boring as frack, then the people sucked because they were all slaves. You know? I don't know. Maybe that's a bit harsh. Maybe that's just kind of a bitter retrospect of mine. But I think that's basically the case, right? You know, I didn't have a lot of good times with authorities in school, as you can imagine. I think I got suspended 17 times from high school. Yeah. And it didn't work out too well for me. Especially trying to pursue higher education. That was another thing that really fracked me around. I can't be bothered doing that article. I haven't even had my coffee yet, ladies and gentlemen. This is how rushed off my feet I am, and then my guest cancels on me. Gosh, dang it, that's so fracking irritating. We have Max Egan messaging me, though. I wonder if he'll come on. that'd be actually quite nice. Bail me out right in the middle of it. I'm sorry, ladies and gentlemen. I'm sorry. Hold on. Let me scull a bit of coffee because a lot of people don't realize how I do this show. You know, like, oh my God, where does he get the energy from? It's not rocket science. It's rocket fuel. And you know, just slurp it back, ladies and gentlemen. Especially if you're a talk radio show host and you like to, you know, get your stuff together, on air. Trust me, coffee is absolutely essential. Watch this. Oh God, that's better. I can't believe it. Just how egregiously exhausted I get if I don't have my morning coffee fix. You know what I'm saying? How addictive is coffee? Like I could give up cigarettes, give up weed. That's easy. You know. By day two, day three, it's basically over. You know, it's not that hard. Coffee, on the other hand, for a week plus, and I didn't go past the week. That's why it's plus. Headaches, feelings of utter dehydration as your body tends to crave the stuff. It kills 10,000 people a year. Caffeine, you know that. And yesterday on the show, I drank so many fracking coffees. I swear to God, I must have broken something because I came off the air with Suzanne Pozzola, Occupy Corporatism, and I was shaking, like literally having this little shake kind of thing. It was really freaky, and it took me a while for the caffeine levels in my blood to go down. You know, I just drank a lot of water and ate a bit of food. You know, that kind of thing. It worked out. And we have a caller coming on the line. Ralph Engel, caller on the line. You are on the air on the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Welcome.
Hey, mate. How you doing?
I'm good, bro. You're calling us from England, aren't you, mate?
Yeah, I do. I thought I'd save the silence a bit because your guest cancelled. So.
Yeah. Well, you're in England yourself too. So any word of Bilderberg out there?
Oh, it's quite interesting, actually. They're all over the place. I'm currently working as a waiter for an agency. And guess who our biggest clients are?
The Bilderbergers?
It's all finance.
Yes.
Honestly, they're living a champagne-styled lifestyle. and people had no idea how much wastage in terms of food, just the lavish parties that they have, entertainment, everything. It's the parties are just out of this world. They can literally sum up a thought in their head, like if they want a theme, that sort of thing. It's all happening, and our biggest clients are financial people.
Well, have you noticed that this is what the finance world really is about? It's actually not about making money or being productive. It's about, you know, debauchery.
Exactly. And, like, the interesting thing about my job is the things that I sort of overhear as a waiter, because, you know, they think you don't exist. So while you're serving them, I'm sort of eavesdropping here and there. Some of the things that they say is, like, you know, if you're making money, just keep doing it. So there's no thought as to how they're actually destroying the economic climate at the moment.
Well, of course, they don't have a lack of concern about the destruction that they've wrought upon us. And I think that's because they're actually the causes of it and they love it. But then again, I was thinking about something David Icke was saying, is that he wants to talk to the people in the police uniforms and the dark suits in government and how they have no power because they're not actually creating the system. They're just serving it, and they really have no idea. And I think this is the problem with all of society, isn't it, Ralph? People just have no fracking idea the purpose that they serve and the things that they accomplish. And they don't have any idea either that they're expendable.
Well, I think people realise that sort of like the jobs that they dish out, for example, every single person is doing one little bit of the chain, and most people don't see the bigger picture because they don't see outside of what they have to do. So things like the security guards, for example, they don't know what they're guarding at the front of the door of the venue, that sort of thing. It's just everything is segregated as such so that no one knows exactly what the bigger picture is. I mean, I'm quite fortunate, I guess, to see the inside story, and also being an awake person, I sort of see things like, you know, just like looking at people's name tags, for example, what companies they're from, and who's mingling with who. And because these parties happen often as well, it's really interesting to see what's actually going on. And as soon as you start connecting the dots a little bit, say, for example, this bank is working with this bank, that sort of thing. I went, for example, you'll love this. I did a job at a gallery, a Saatchi gallery, a really nice gallery here in London. And it's actually for Credit Suisse. And they talk about derivatives. They talk about overtaking real assets. I think they want to overtake sort of like wineries, that sort of thing. And they talk about doing it aggressively. So, you know, then it's a game. But unfortunately, with every game, there are losers. And there are a lot of losers at the moment in this climate. And for them, it's all about getting all the best assets, all the best land, and keeping it all for themselves, really.
See, people like you and I don't share this mentality, okay? We don't like to steal. We don't like to accumulate vast amounts of stuff by screwing people over, all right? And I think most people are like that. You just don't actually want to be too much of a douchebag to other people, do you? And here's the difference. We've got empathy, bro. Empathy. These people fracking don't, do they? Are they, by chance, very smiley, happy-looking people who have no fracking depth to their character whatsoever?
Well, they dress in nice clothes. Like I say, they live a champagne lifestyle. So, you know, they serve by heaps of stuff, too much stuff, actually, to serve little the amount of people that they have and their guests. Normally, a lot of our parties, there's only about 100 guests and there's dozens of staff. There's probably two per person attending them their every need. And for them, it's that power. It's that they are very smiley, like you say. They've sort of got this this look to their eyes like they're, I can't describe it, like they're vultures, like they're sort of always, I know, they don't, they've got this different look to their eye.
What, like the no soul kind of look?
Not no soul. I mean, they're obviously enjoying their time and stuff like that, but I guess for them it's power. It's like they don't see, they see people as expendable, like you say. They see people as cattle, as assets. They talk about people as I can't remember how they put it. It's sort of just human capital is how they put it. So people are just animals, really, to them. They look at a person and they say, well, how much money can this person make for a company, say, and how little can we pay them? Mm. They talk a lot about debt markets. And they share this information regularly amongst themselves. So they're in a real strong position compared to everyone else.
Would you say they're in a bubble? You know, like there's not a whole...
I wouldn't say they're in a bubble. I'd say they're very clever. I'd say they're very clever, and they're dealing with other very clever people with, for example, the head of one person of an industry. A lot of the time, say, for example, if it's the housing industry, the head of the housing industry would be talking to a head of a bank. So these two heads, you know, they're in very strong positions and they can manipulate the markets accordingly. How I explain it is it's like a triangle, right? Each of these industries, there's one person that deals with the top of that triangle, and another person that deals with another triangle at the top of that triangle, and they sort of, everyone else below that is affected, and it's only due to these two people at the top. And because those two people are sort of playing the game, they meet up regularly, they have these champagne lifestyles, they're in a really strong position. Okay. And for them really it's a game.
All right.
Well,
Okay, well, we're coming off the break now, Ralph. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen. The call-in number is 218-339-8525. That's 218-339-8525. You listen to the Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. We're trying to check it and rock it and kick it, innit? And we're speaking with Ralph Engel, who is he is This Flight Tonight. I think you can check him out at thisflighttonight.com. So he has some fabulous music. And if you happen to be around London walking the streets at night, you might be able to see him busking illegally. And my very special guest also joining us is Suzanne Posel from OccupyCorporatism.com. Suzanne, welcome.
Hello everyone.
I don't know if you've been listening to the conversation previously, but Ralph's working in a bit of a finance sector job at the moment, and talking about how they don't really care about anybody and how they treat everybody like cattle, and they're sort of scum. Who would have thunk it?
Just to clarify there, Susan, I'm not sure if you were listening before. I don't work in the finance sector as such. I'm sort of at the very bottom as a waiter, but I do see a lot of these finance heads, and they're another level, really. They're a different breed. How I say it is, because I recently did a trip to Egypt, and it was really interesting to see how history hasn't really changed. For example, the pharaohs in Egypt, they'd have all these waiters waitering at them with all these wonderfully laid out dishes and things like that, and it was, everything is so extravagant. And this is they're living the pharaoh life. It's exactly the same it is now. The food that they serve is just, it's another level. It's absolutely amazing. And it's, yeah, it's all served on a silver platter for them. And so for them, they're living in a completely different world to everybody else. And I think how I perceive it is they see their games as a game, and they see people as just basically numbers of debt. They talk about debt management a lot, and it's for them, it's just maybe numbers on a screen, and they sometimes forget that these numbers on the screen are actually to deal with real life, with real people. So, but I think they're a little bit disconnected.
Well, that's kind of what I meant by them living in a bubble, Ralph, is that they're very much disconnected from the people that they rule, sort of thing. And I think that's what breeds a lot of contempt in society, is just simple unfamiliarity with the consequences of your actions. If you don't have any consequences to your actions, what's to stop you from acting horribly?
Absolutely, yeah, and they're true. Totally removed from average everyday life that we live. They live in a completely different world where everything is given to them, and if they want something, they get it. It's not a matter of looking in your bank account and seeing whether or not you can afford it or which credit card hasn't been maxed out yet. They have no concept of what we go through. If they want something, they just say that they want it, and somebody brings it to them. So in the same respect, we have no concept of the world they live in, and they have no concept of the world that we live in.
I'll give you an example of the things that they can just summon up. If they think of an idea in their mind, it just happens. I know of a person that actually works in a job, and her job is basically, she works for rich clients, and her job is to create whatever they have in mind. For example, a lot of these people really high up, really rich billionaires, they have a lot of free time, so they travel a lot, and that's a passion for them. They could just hop on a plane to LA, for example, and just overnight in their private jet. And a lot of the time, a lot of them are collectors. Basically, like if they see, for example, an old church, they can go to a agency and be like, I want to recreate that old church, that 1700, year old church, and I want that in my garden. And believe it or not, that was her job. And one of her clients, for example, you know those caves with the icicles? Isotites, what are they called? The little things at the roof?
I don't know. Isolites? I don't know.
It's really late. I can't think of it. She had to recreate a cave with an old cave with isolites at the top and an old church. And Matt, she had to make that up. And, it's just little things like that. They can just do this, basically. They have the resources. Unfortunately, I think they're stealing a lot of the assets from taxpayers as well. They talk a lot about how to avoid tax loops. Things like that. So for them, it's a game, and they've got a lot of advantage to everybody else.
They're in the club, man. The club that none of us are in.
Yeah.
Now, talking about Bilderberg as well, Suzanne, I have not covered Bilderberg at all on the show while it's been going on. Ralph's in England. What have you heard about it?
Well, it's really interesting, actually. I was driving home with my bandmate. We play in a band called This Flight Tonight, as you know. But we were really intrigued because we were driving down this road, and there's all these cops. Seriously,
I think it looked like a golf course or something like that, but for every entrance, there was about 8 cops. And we thought it was a crime scene or something like that. And it was only till I did my research later. I think Alex Jones was covering it. I think he was protesting outside Bilderberg and he was talking to the security guards and telling them about the corruption of Bilderberg and how they're going to be stealing their pension funds in the next 5 years, that sort of thing. And then I was like, holy moly, that's what we saw. And anyways, that was my experience with Bilderberg. But what intrigued me, and my guitarist didn't see at the time, was just the amount of resources that they're just wasting. All these policemen guarding them.
From how many people? Because I've heard people say that there was like virtually nobody there, and then I've heard other people say that there was speeches in front of crowds of like that you couldn't see the end of.
Well, for us, I don't know. I mean, everyone would have saw something different, but for us, it was driving down this road. It was a very private road. You know, like basically, it looked like New Zealand. There's a lot of bush. You know, it's just in the middle of nowhere, basically. This wasn't in central London as such. It was sort of Zone 7 in the very outskirts of London. So, but there was no walking traffic, and there was just this one single road, and maybe just the traffic itself was very minor. And I think just for us even, driving past this place, you wouldn't know what was happening around the corner because it was all, you know, closed up from view due to bushes and things like that. But it was really interesting because we drove past it and we were wondering what's going on there, and we didn't really think much of it. And it was only until I saw the video of Alex Jones and saw the area that he was in, and it was definitely that was it. I think, and that's really all I can say about my experience with the Bilderberg event.
Well, I'd like Suzanne, if you could, to comment on recent Bilderberg meetings, because I've heard Alex Jones has been on BBC ranting again, and I don't know. I hear mixed whisperings, I guess. I wonder what your perspective was.
I'm kind of waiting till everything dies down. I see that Dan Dix is over there, and they've got like a platform and a lot of equipment, and they've got like a huge, it almost looks like a stage that they've got out there. It's more high tech, it appears, than it was before, so maybe they've gotten some funding to go out there. But yeah, Alex Jones went on BBC Sunday on Channel 2, I think BBC 2, and made a complete ass out of himself on the show. And the host of the show said that as soon as Alex Jones knew that the cameras were off and that they had ended the show, that he changed his demeanor completely. And the host said that it must be all an act when he gets up on stage and starts ranting and raving, because it didn't seem genuine to him at all. Which doesn't shock me.
It's an act. That's what he does when he goes on mainstream media. And actually, this is a good thing, because if you're putting on an act when you're going on in front of mainstream media, it means that you're wanting to get a specific reaction out of them, right? And I've seen him on, say, Piers Morgan, and I've seen what Piers Morgan did to, say, Jesse Ventura, for example, talking over that kind of thing. And Alex is very smart, so he knew that they'd probably try and do that to him, you know, demonize him, whatever. So he just comes out all guns blazing as soon as the cameras are on, gets out the information, I have the documents, et cetera, et cetera. And then as soon as he jumps out of the studio, he's back to being a friendly, loving, jovial old Alex.
Exactly. And the thing that was funny was after he was on the show, he stood outside the studio with his with Paul Joseph Watson, and he basically admitted that he goes ahead and makes a show of it. He claims that he has to do this because he's
Suzanne, hold on a second.
Become a martyr.
Is the NSA pushing your buttons or something like that? I hear the phone kind of going.
Oh, I don't know. Maybe.
Maybe one of the Rugrats.
Can you hear me now?
Maybe one of the Rugrats in the next room. Oh, yeah, we can hear you just fine. It's just every now and again somebody presses a phone button and we hear the tone.
Oh, that's weird. Maybe it's from the show we did last night.
It's as soon as you mention Bilderberg and Alex Jones, mate, that's when they come in. That's when they get you. You know, it's kind of like body snatchers. They only get you when you sleep. The NSA snatchers, they only get you when you're talking about Alex Jones and Bilderberg.
Yeah, Alex Jones, I've written a couple of articles about him and exposing his ties to Stratfor and the fact that he gets regular emails from Stratfor. And things like that, and how he hired Molly Maroney.
I'm unfamiliar with what Stratfor is.
Stratfor is, the CIA is not allowed to legally operate in the United States. So they have a shell corporation called Stratfor, and Stratfor collects intelligence and disseminates it at a cost to corporations and governments and all these things. So he, through his Infowars.net, which is a mirror site of Infowars.com, there is an email address called oneoldpath.infowars.net. And that is on the list for Stratfor for getting emails for intelligence and anything that they email out, like general emails to people. And that Infowars.net, if you go on Who Is database, you will find that it is owned by Free Speech LLC, which is the company that Jones owns, where he produces Infowars.com and all the other stuff, the television show and everything else. So he does receive emails from Stratfor. That's probably where he gets all of his intelligence. Other than that, going back to the show that he did on BBC, he was standing outside the studio and saying that if he didn't behave this way, then, you know, he would become a martyr, and that's why he hasn't died. When he was on the show, the second guest asked him, well, if you're exposing all of this stuff about the Bilderbergs and all this New World Order, how come they haven't killed you? And that's when he proclaimed that, you know, he's so scary important to the movement that if they went to kill him, he would become a martyr and all of his audience would freak out because he was no longer around. And so they keep him alive because he's too high profile. It's not worth killing him. And that's the narcissism of Alex Jones. That's what he thinks, that he's so scary important that he can't be taken out.
Nobody can't be taken out.
Exactly. If they're going to shoot JFK in the face right in front of the audience, and they're going to shoot Martin Luther King, and they're going to kill Bill Cooper right standing outside his house, why aren't they going to take out Alex Jones? I mean, what makes him so important?
You got to wonder, actually. Just think about the massive popularity of InfoWars, and think about all the people that are listening to him. I think he's actually got a point, don't you? That with the millions of people that are listening to him every single day, and the paranoia that sets in when you're listening to it, and trust me, I listened to Alex Jones for a couple of years. Believe me, the paranoia starts to set in relatively soon. And if he were to have been killed back then when I was just totally obsessively listening to it every single day, sure, I would have freaked out. I would have gone and done something crazy. It's just multiply Vinny crazy by a million, and that would be the reaction that Alex Jones dies. I mean, like, you think about Hollywood stars who allegedly get whacked, as what was his name? Randy Quaid came out publicly and said that Hollywood has a bunch of star whackers working in the industry, and they kill off stars who are starting to learn about the Illuminati. And what's interesting is these stars die, and there's not much of an uproar. It's just, oh, they're dead, drug overdose, whatever, all total setups, allegedly. And on the other hand, they haven't built up their audience of people that are almost exclusively truthers who are listening to this kind of content, are they? They've got masses of people who are on various different planes of awareness, whereas Jones, on the other hand, you take him out, everybody's on that plane of awareness already that that there's evil scumbags who would try and assassinate him. I think he's actually quite right. He would be taken as a bit of a martyr. But, you know, I could be wrong.
Well, I think that they need people in the movement. I go back to the article that I wrote last year about how the DHS plans to deal with the Patriot movement. And going back to 2009, they outlined that they were going to infiltrate the alternative movement, create plants, and put people in there to move the audience to the direction that they wanted them to go. And we've got people that we assume are working with the government. We have useful idiots in the movement who are just making waves and trying to make names for themselves and get clicks to their website. But all of this works toward moving us away from our goal, which is to return not only the United States to a constitutional republic, but to return the globe to each nation to its sovereignty out of the grip of the technocratic regime and the one-world government. So I absolutely agree with you. Jones fits. He has a purpose. It's just not the purpose that everybody thinks it is.
Also, in regards to the occupied movement, I think the people that we're up against know the power of the movement. And so what they're trying to do as well is put people in within the movement to divide and conquer that movement as well. Because if we forget about what we're actually fighting for, and again, to reiterate, what we're fighting for is derivatives, illegal trading of assets, money equals debt, so putting people in debt on purpose. This is what we're fighting for. People have to realize that money is made out of thin air. If you go to a bank and if you want a loan, for example, you know, all they have to do is type numbers into a computer and voila, that's it. A lot of people don't realize that concept. They don't realize that money these days isn't backed by anything anymore. And this is what we're fighting for. There's just the awareness. Be aware of the game, and, you know, keep it simple. But I think they are trying to put people within the movement to demonize sort of leaders within that movement, to discredit them, to make them look bad, to make them look crazy, all these things, because they know the power of the movement, I think. And I think It's in their faces. They know the power of it. So.
Yeah,
but we need to stay focused. They can't divide and conquer the movement, because as soon as they do that, you know.
I think we're dividing and conquering ourselves in a lot of ways with some of the people out there. We've got a caller on the line here in a 347 area code. Where are you calling from? Caller, welcome. Caller, you're on the air. 347 area code. 347-957-86. Come on. You're on the air, man. We can hear you. No? You don't want to talk? Okay. Silly person. Back to the...
This is one of the people, man.
Yeah. Here we are. They're calling in to sabotage and derail.
They're pretending that the caller's not interested in the show, so they've just hung up.
Totally. In fact, we had I had a guest on a while back, and then we had a caller call into the show, and the first thing the caller says, what are you guys actually talking about today? I've missed most of the show. It's just, come on. You know, people, you know, calling in out there, 218-339-8525. There's two requirements to be a caller. Number one, have something to fracking say. Number two, know what we've been talking about. You know, you have to be listening for at least a couple of minutes and like form some kind of opinion or question,
tell,
you know. Something to contribute.
Tell them to go back and watch. tell them to go back and watch Zeitgeist, the documentary, or Money is Debt, or something like that, and then bring call back.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. Okay, now, speaking about this, cognitive infiltration of the truth movement, Rahm Emanuel, the US science, that's what he called for, okay? And he specifically mentioned 9/11 truth. So, here's the question. People get paranoid, right? So, if people are prone to getting paranoid and they're in a movement which is conspiracy-oriented, which lends itself to paranoia even more, if you start talking about infiltrators, COINTELPRO, and so on and so forth, are you putting the horse before the cart? Because I've been accused of being COINTELPRO many, many times, okay? And I don't know why. and
it's probably them trying to demonize your character. That's what they do, is they try to good leaders, and I see you as one of the best leaders in New Zealand, Vinny, because there's no one else doing what you're doing, and it's a really great thing that you're
no one else
by default. Yes. No, you're doing a pretty good job, and there'll be people out there. You're in public profile now. There'll be people out there trying to demonize your character, and that's what it's all about. If they can demonize your character, people forget about what you're actually talking about. So, just to reiterate again, the important thing about the main conspiracy, it's not even a conspiracy, is that throughout history, people have used money as a tool of slavery. And also, a lot of these kingdoms, I have to mention this because I thought it was really interesting. You know how we have a lot of borders within the world at the moment? So you've got a lot of, you need passports to get to certain areas, borders, that sort of thing. Borders weren't created until the 1700s, apparently. And same with money. It's a new concept, and people forget about that. But they're born into a world where they're trained from the very beginning to see it as a normal thing. It's really interesting, actually. I oversaw this, like, early childhood training book, for example, and they have little pictures and saying, this is an apple, A for apple, yay. Also, D for dollar, you know, that sort of thing. It's like, right from the word go, you're ingrained to think that money is a natural, organic thing. But you've got to remember that money is a new thing, and money is used as a tool of slavery, and that's all.
I'm thinking about, like, you do a children's booklet like that, but do really big, complicated words so the kids become smarter a lot quicker, you know. A for asinine, B for beryllium, something
of that. A for derivative.
Yeah. D for derivative, C for conspiracy, F for fluoride, you know. You imagine the conspiracy ABC. All the way up to Z for zeitgeist. Because I've also got this feeling, bro, that what's happening now in the movement is that people are getting so obsessed with COINTELPRO that they've become COINTELPRO themselves, and they don't even know what it is, right? Like my mate Mike, my bandmate, bro. He was like, "Oh man, I think they're COINTELPRO," and I asked him, "Do you know what COINTELPRO means? Like the word COINTELPRO?" It's like. He didn't even know what COINTELPRO means, and he's accusing somebody of being COINTELPRO, which he doesn't know what it means.
people sometimes, they just echo what they hear. So, for example, I've been reading this, the George Orwell 1984 book recently. It's a great book, and it's really a great insight to what's actually happening right now. But, where was I going with this? Yeah, people just echo what they hear, even if it's complete false fabrication. In George Orwell, the 1984 book, they talk about history, for example, is because an event or something like that happened so long ago, people just fabricate it. They could, fabricate a phony photograph, type a bunch of random facts, and there we go, that's your fact. And then people take that and they just echo what they've learnt, and that's not the right way to do things. You just got keep your eyes open, you know, make a decision for yourself, because the world is not what it seems.
Mm. All right, now we're going to go to our caller now in a 615 area code. Caller, you're on the air. Welcome.
Yes, am I on the air?
You are indeed.
Hello? Oh, well, wonderful. Great fan of the show. I really like how Suzanne Posel questions Alex Jones and Rand Paul and all those kind of things. And I just have a suggestion. The asset that Alex Jones has to the opposition is just what you said. He acts like a maniac. So, you know, he exposes way too much for me to think that the government really likes him. If it probably weren't for him, I probably wouldn't be listening to you guys. But just the fact that he goes on shows and acts like a maniac allows them to then turn around and demonize him. So your thoughts on that?
Here's what I think about that. Did you see the normal Piers Morgan show and how many hits he gets on YouTube? You know, thousands of hits per video. You see Alex Jones go on and act like a maniac. Millions of hits. Millions and millions. It becomes a national talking point. Do you not think that that's effective marketing?
I think so, and it may be, a battle between the two sides. They think they're going to get him on. They think they're going to demonize him, and then he gets on, and then maybe he wins. But the BBC had to know. They had to, like, want him on there and know that he was going to do that. And she's right. He almost did that on cue. Comparing it to the Piers Morgan show, he really just almost seemed, and I love the Piers Morgan thing, but he almost seemed like on cue, like he was doing it. But then again, they have to know he's going to do that and he's cooperating. But I just think that, you know, that's the only asset that I can really see. If he is an agent for him, then he's doing a lot of damage to them. But perhaps he can be controlled by business.
My former producer has the saying, how you do anything is how you do everything. If he's fake on air on BBC, what's to say he's not fake on his own radio show? What's to say he's not really fake in person? What's to say he's not just one big phony?
That's a good point. But do you or anyone speaking think that the sum total of what he does... I mean, even if he's a plant, do you think the sum total of what he does is beneficial or not? And is he making his masters happy, in other words?
Well, first of all, you made the point earlier that you wouldn't be listening to this show if it weren't for him. Hell, I wouldn't be doing this show if it weren't for him, you know? So regardless of whatever you think of the guy, he wakes people the frack up. He's grown the movement massively. There's downsides to it, though, because you know how nobody's perfect. I think the same applies here, don't you think?
Exactly. We have to remember that Alex Jones is a human being, and he's not going to be perfect. No one is. So he's going to have his strengths and weaknesses. You know, he doesn't rely on a public PR, for example, to tell him what to say or what not to say. He just says it. And that's a good thing. You know, we can't discredit him completely because he's going to say things that we're going to think as completely ridiculous or even incorrect. But the fact that he's part of this movement, the fact that he's aware of what's happening around this world, and he's got people behind him supporting what he's doing, that's the important thing, I think. And again, it's that whole don't divide and conquer the movement. Just, you know, respect that he's just a person. But I think he's doing the right thing. I think he's doing okay. He's waking up, like you said, he's woken a lot of people up, and that's great.
I'd say he's woken up more people than anybody in human history.
Well, can I say something?
Go ahead, Suzanne.
Yes, he has woken people up. But he has also stifled the entire audience, and the 15 million people who listen to him are not acting. There's a very small percentage of people, like Vinny, like myself, who actually get up and do something on their own. And but the majority of his audience sit back and listen. It's entertainment for them, or it's fear porn for them. And they're not taking it to the next level, which is where we need to be, where we're actually acting on the information that we have instead of just consuming it on a daily basis.
I think the reason being as well is you got to remember that a lot of people are just waking up, or they're not woken up yet. And I sometimes listen to the Alex Jones show, and to be honest, you know, I listen to it and I go, I have no idea what he's talking about. And respect to him, because he's been researching whatever he's been researching full time. But sometimes I think people do switch off because he's not really, you know, his knowledge is completely different to someone who's just woken up. So they're gonna you know, disconnect themselves a little bit, I think, for that reason. So
There's also a sense of urgency when you're listening to an InfoWars broadcast. Like, oh my God, there's now, we've got this new information, we've got this brand news and all this so on and so forth. You know, it's very now, and it creates this great hype that you want to listen to the show every single day and so on and so forth, and it becomes relentless, you know, relentlessly absorbing information. My question is, how much information do you feel that you need to absorb, ladies and gentlemen, before you get off your ass and start applying that information and actually start up exposing scumbaggery in the New World Order? Okay, it took me quite a bit, you know, maybe 6 months to a year of listening and watching documentaries and things like that before I realized that there wasn't anything like that here and started doing it. So what's your point, ladies and gentlemen? When are you going to wake up and start doing something? We'll be right back after the break at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, ladies and gentlemen. Check the labels, delete the virus, alert the masses. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show. And I do believe that we have the caller line open still. So please call in, ladies and gentlemen, 218-339-8525. That's 218-339-8525 is the number to call in. I'm going to talk about Bilderberg and so on and so forth today, but it tends to... we've just derailed the conversation. It's all about Alex Jones, isn't it? It's all about Alex Jones. I don't know how other people feel about me when I say this, but I just love listening to Alex Jones. You know, it's great. You know, it's kind of like the show Cops. What Bill Hicks says about the show Cops is every single time you tune into it, it's the same show. A woman has been beaten by her husband. Her head looks like a melon. Her 14 cracker spawn are peering around her gingham skirt. And they're trying to take away the husband. And you go, no, don't take him away. He's a good man. He don't mean no harm. And that's kind of like the Alex Jones show for me. You know, it's like just sitting there. And I don't know. It's great. There's this persona to him and this kind of a raging Texan vein on his forehead. That threatens to explode, showering the InfoWars document cam with arterial blood. It's just fun to watch, I guess, I must say.
Here's the thing. It's great. Take what he's done and improve it. Like you say, we finished off the last segment with what are people going to do themselves? I think Thomas Edison said himself, vision without execution is hallucination. So stop just listening to Alex Jones. Do something. Create something.
Create anything. Yeah. Suzanne, have you actually been on InfoWars or something like that before?
No, I was letting them repost my articles, and for a while he was talking me up, and they were covering my stuff on his nightly news show, and he was saying my name like 5 times a broadcast every day for several months. But when I found out that he isn't what he purports to be, I wrote Kurt Nemo a letter. After they offered me to become an outhouse staff writer, not an in-house, not that I was sitting in an outhouse, but, you know, I would be able to do what I do here and just submit my articles to them and have them published and they would pay for it. But I didn't want to be part of that after I had done some digging in on who he really is and what he really does. So I stepped away from that. But I watched his show too, and absolutely. I mean, the paranoia does sit in very quickly after you start listening to him. You start looking out your blinds, thinking that every time a cop drives by your house, they're going to come and get you. And but then you move on and you realize that you have to do something. And I wish that more of his audience would be inspired to do something. It seems like they're inspired to continually consume the information that he's providing, but never get beyond that point.
I think you have to break out of the digital realm into the real world. I think that's where you get your real motivation from, when you're actually contacting and doing things with real people. And look, you can organize as much as you want on Facebook. You can organize and as much as you want on YouTube or any other social media network platform, but you're not actually having any real contact with real people. And that in itself, I think, is really, really bad thing. I mean, I have had many, many conversations with people on Facebook, but I think I have far more verbal conversations. Like this is what we're doing right here, right now. This is just a conversation between three real people. It's just incidentally there's thousands of people listening. And other than that, we're just as genuine as we are on air as we are in person. Like Suzanne, I've talked to you off air. You're the same person on air as you are off air. Ralph, you too. I'm the exact same person that I am on air than I am off air. I'm always having fun, telling laughs and stuff. Maybe I'm a little bit dirtier and use a bit more profanity in person because we're not under FCC regulations when I'm walking around the house. But other than that, you know, pretty fracking genuine. I think it's when people put on a mask of any kind that there is this dramatis persona that comes over them. You know, like the hand comes down and the expression changes and they become a rabid derivatives criticizing dog sort of thing.
Absolutely. And after a while, people start to sense that and they can see that. And it's very hard if you're not the genuine person that you really are, whether you're in public or private. People eventually get to see that. And there's no point. This movement is about taking back our individual countries and taking back our world. There's no room for rock stars. The fact that we even have rock stars or famous people in this movement makes me sick to my stomach. It shocks me that that phenomenon would even happen like it does in the mainstream media.
Yeah, I'm actually really afraid of that thing happening to me as well. Like, if I become, like, real famous and then suddenly there comes, like, this Vinnie Eastwood cult following, and people would, like, defend me from criticism at all points and start abusing people who attack me and stuff. I don't want that to happen, man. Let people attack me. Let people viciously tell malicious lies about me. Don't defend me in any way, shape, or form, okay? Get on with your own life. Protect your own families. I'll be all right, okay? And I think that that's actually a real problem, because you see these videos criticizing Alex Jones, and there's just this whole group of people that come out of the woodwork, giving you abuse, threats, so on and so forth. It's just completely and utterly ridiculous. And it's just like, dude, don't you have anything better in your life? Don't you have somebody who actually like needs your help? Alex Jones doesn't need people's help to protect him. Not at all.
No.
He's perfectly capable of protecting himself, and so am I, you know. Don't need your help to protect. What we need is your help to wake people up. We need your help to go out and accost scumbags with cameras and so on and so forth and posting those videos online. We need you to be going to city council meetings and taking fracking notes about how the Agenda 21 implementation is going on. You need to be starting the blogs up. You need to be taking these people to court. All of these things that we're not doing, okay, just have a look at what people like Suzanne and myself do, doing articles, doing a radio show, so on and so forth. There is a hell of a lot that we're not doing that we would do if we had the time, okay? And if you're not doing this radio show, if you're not doing a articles or blogs or something like that, you should be doing something else, preferably something else that people aren't already doing yet. There is a need in society for you to wake up. There is a need in society for you to get active. There is a need for you to start growing fracking vegetables, of all things. Isn't that interesting? How the most simple, basic thing of actually having a secure food supply that isn't poisoned by Monsanto is one of the most important things you could possibly be doing right now at this very particular moment in time.
Absolutely. And that march on Monsanto, we can take any number of areas where we all have a common enemy and organize marches every week. We could be doing that every week, all across the globe. There's lots of how many pharmaceutical corporations can we go after? We've got here in the tax season. You know, why don't we just march and say we're not going to pay our taxes?
The thing is also organization within a movement, because what they're actually doing is, if, even if you go out there and protest, all they have to do is click a finger, use their muscle men to arrest you, and that's it. You're out of the game. We need a creative movement where there's an open dialogue first, I think, before an action. It's so easy to go out there and try and destroy what they've done. But rather than destroying what they've done, I think creating is a stronger thing. You know, create. You've got the best weapon at the moment to create content online. And that's photos, videos, because photos and videos don't lie. So if you see scumbaggery, film it. You know, that's a first step, I think, is always have a video camera with you, and that's so easy these days with technology. But I'll give you an example. I mean, living in London, it's completely different to New Zealand. London, it's all about uniforms. You've got police, security. They're all there to animate those uniforms, and they're all there to suppress their cattle, basically. And sometimes these people in uniforms get in power trips because they think they're representing something that, you know, that's not actually there. But if you film that, if you take photos of that, if you make videos, it tells all. So, yeah, create rather than destroy, I think. So if you go out there and protest, I think it does very little, because you could easily get arrested. You know, they can destroy your name just like that.
How many protests have you been to, Ralph?
I've seen a lot of protests, but I'm not brave enough to participate in one because of that, because I'm disposable.
I think you're afraid of something that doesn't really exist. It's actually quite difficult to get arrested at a protest. The only reason why you might think that it is easy to get arrested at a protest is because those are the real popular videos, because people love seeing protesters get arrested on YouTube. And I've been to hundreds of protests and never once been close to getting...
That could be true in New Zealand. I've seen a comparison. New Zealand police, for example, are great people. As soon as you get to London, the heart of the empire, they've done this for years. They put on a uniform. They're not on the same level as you. So the police here, they will brutalize you and get away with it. So it depends where you are, I think. New Zealand's quite lucky because it's still a young country.
I have been brutalized by New Zealand police before, though, and they did get away with it. So it's not entirely different. I'm just thinking, like, you're trying what you say, that protesting doesn't make a difference, but not going out and protesting because you're afraid of being arrested, I think that's that doesn't fly with reality for me. But the other element is here is that if you go into a protest, sure, don't expect that the world's going to change because of it. That's why I take video and upload shockingly large amounts of footage from all those protests, because it's actually the information that the speakers give you, usually at the beginnings of marches or at the ends of marches, that are the real juicy nuggets of information. Those are incidentally the things that the mainstream media, that's when they stop filming. They're going to be speaking for more than a 2-second sound bite. So yeah, let's just turn the camera off. We want to ask the questions. We want to direct these people to answer things that are basically completely irrelevant and don't make any fracking difference. And then audio nibble them away to nothingness on the media. And so when somebody like me goes to a protest, for example, you see there's two different protests. One where people are actually talking about facts and figures, legislation, and so on and so forth, and resistance. And another who are just a bunch of disheveled hippies full of one-liners that don't mean anything. And I think that's probably the main tragedy of protests. I see so many people with cameras there, guys. I see so many people with cameras at protests. And barely ever do I see anybody other than me uploading more than one or two of those videos, if they upload anything at all. And I don't know what it is about some people. They think they need to perfect something before they get it out there. And I'm just going to say, you know, it's like if you're waiting for perfection, you're going to be waiting a hell of a long time, and by then the moment has passed.
It's a chess game, isn't it? If you're waiting to take that horse or that, you know, whatever, rather than just taking it, making that move, you're going to lose the game. So I do agree in that. Look, full respect to people that are out there protesting, and full respect to them fully. I agree.
Well, your whole life can be a protest. You can make a decision to not do something that you used to do because what you did before was supporting something that you don't agree with. Or you can, you know, you can stop going to Starbucks because they put horrible things in their coffee and you don't want to support that business anymore. You can stop shopping at any number of stores because you don't agree with their ethics and their values and how they bring the products to you. And you can get people to do that every day. So it doesn't have to always be some march, some great event. It could just be every single day you make a conscious decision not to do something and get your friends and family or whoever you know involved to stop doing it too. That could be your protest.
That's a really good point.
And it's about resistance, okay? Protesting is one form of resistance. Making radio shows, articles, videos, that's another form of resistance. Drafting documents and so on and so forth, exposing high-level corruption, that's another form of resistance. I think if everybody did one thing, just one thing every single day to resist the current system and maybe did another thing extra the next day, before you know it, you'd be in an exponentially resistant world where no form of scumbaggery would ever be able to take root again.
There's one powerful thing that everyone can do if they were to do one thing, I think, is just to realize that money is debt. Maybe just stop borrowing, or rather than borrowing from the bank, peer-to-peer lending, make alternatives, you know, that sort of thing. Yeah.
And if peer-to-peer lending doesn't work, orange to apple lending works as well.
And what we were talking about last night on my show, if you have information, let the whistleblowers come out, you know? If they all come out in unison or if they all come out within a timely fashion of each other, what are they going to do? We need to put the people, we need to put the controllers in a position where they're scrambling because they're getting hit on all sides because they're doing that same thing to us.
Yeah. And this is exactly why I'm acting right now, because I know I'll be in a worse off position if I don't. I mean, ideally I could, you know, lose my lifeline here. By just talking, you know, being a whistleblower as such, you know, talking about what's happening with bankers here in London and me as an insider, as a waiter. No, I could seriously lose my lifeline, and that would be a terrible thing. But if I don't, I mean, it will get worse.
Mm. Well, see, I've always wondered this as well. It's like, why are people afraid to speak out? And it's because of that. They really are afraid to lose their livelihood at the end of the day. And it's quite a sad state of affairs, I think, where your continued survival means supporting a system that's going to kill you and everybody else. Think about that for a minute, ladies and gentlemen, while we take this break at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, broadcasting live on American Freedom Radio. Back in a minute. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. We've got an article in here from about their NSA leaker. Is that how you pronounce the name? But before we do that, got a joke for you, ladies and gentlemen. Come up with this over the break. What do frogs on Wall Street trade? Derivatives. Anyway, in New Zealand politics, this is what John Key says. Snowden not welcome in New Zealand. I used to go to school with some people named Snowden. They were dicks. Prime Minister John Key says American whistleblower Edward Snowden is not welcome here. His comments follow media reports in which Australian barrister... Not to be confused with the baristas who make good coffee. Geoffrey Robertson said Snowden would likely have a more "quote unquote" pleasant refuge in New Zealand than North Korea or Russia. I believe that's a typo, and they meant a peasant refuge. Snowden was believed to be in Hong Kong after leaking information about the United States intelligence agency's monitoring of internet traffic. Key said today the former security contractor did not meet the requirements for asylum, and it was ridiculous to suggest he would. He wouldn't be welcome, he said. Yeah, I mean, because if there's one thing a corrupt New Zealand government doesn't want, it's people who speak out against corruption. Key couldn't rule out Snowden coming to New Zealand under another immigration category because he was not facing criminal charges. But the Prime Minister expected the government would oppose any asylum application. I can't see why we'd want him to turn up, he said. Well, you certainly wouldn't want him to turn up, Key. You've got frickin' shares in the World Bank and all goodness knows what else. Bank of America, sorry. He's welcome to apply to come here, but not as an asylum seeker. That was the premise of the article. New Zealand was a good, fair country, which up... I love that how he uses the past tense. Listen to this. New Zealand was a good, fair country which upheld its responsibilities under international law. That was the case with the extradition of internet millionaire Kim.com, he said. Kim.com, who incidentally was surveilled illegally by the New Zealand government. What's the Prime Minister knew about? We don't have a view on his, .com's particular case, as we've said so often before. Of course, you don't have any views on it, because if you reveal what your views really were, you'd wind up going to frickin' prison, because you're a scumbag. It's really a matter between the United States and Mr.com, he said. They're invoking the extradition treaty, and we're playing our part as a treaty partner. Have you noticed how every single time that you want to destroy another country, well, one country wants to destroy another country's sovereignty, they have a treaty with them, you know? It's like on Star Wars Episode 1. Oh, we need to sign a treaty, Your Highness, so we can kill and enslave your people. He was a whistleblower inside the organization. He made a moral decision. I think most people on planet Earth would agree the morality of his decision, Russell Norman said. He's the leader of the Green Party here. Key has also been asked about the presence of US spy software company Palantir, which has established a base in Wellington, the capital of New Zealand. He said he knew who they were, but didn't speak for the company.
Let me tell you who they are. They are Peter Thiel owns them. And Peter Thiel sits on the steering committee of the Bilderberg Group, and he helps decide who gets to show up to the meetings. That's who Palantir... Oh, and Palantir Technologies is the favorite technology corporation that the U.S. government likes to use. So there you go. That's who Palantir Technologies is.
Right. Now, Ralph, you're typing a little bit there. You've got to make sure to mute your mic when you're doing that. I always find it really funny as well how transparent articles are for me. Like I'll read through this article and I don't even know who Snowden was until like about a couple of minutes ago, and already I could see the plan and of the scumbaggery, because they don't change their tactics very often, do they? Have you noticed this? If you've seen one conspiracy, you've basically seen them all. It's like, okay, here's the cocktail. Have you got a person who's doing things for moral reasons? Yeah. Is he being demonized? Yeah. Is he being sabotaged? Yeah. Is he a whistleblower of some description? Yeah. Does he threaten the credibility of a hell of a lot of incredibly dangerous people who own copious quantities of assets and corporations that surveil over people and destroy their fracking lives consistently? Yes. Okay, you know, all your ducks are in a row. It seems pretty straightforward, don't you think, that these are the people that the entire world should know about, that the entire world should suddenly go to protect. Oh, my God, this person's being a really good person. He's taking on evil. Let's run out there, put ourselves in the line. I mean, I've been at courtrooms before where I'll be filming, and the police try to arrest me. Actually, people have stepped in front of me to block the police from putting handcuffs on me. All right, that's what people need to be doing, I think, with whistleblowers, you know. Actually, really just cruise around to their house, protect them, and just, you know, do you need some food, bro? Do you need your washing done? Do you need your dishes done? Do you need some coverage on the internet? Do you know, what can I do for you? What can I do? How can I help? I don't know where I'm going with this. I'm just so freaking tired of it all. As Alex Jones would say, I'm tired of it. I'm tired of it. Oh, gee.
I think I know where you're going with it.
I'm sick of the derivatives of the scumbaggery. It just makes me go on a tangent rant.
I think I know where you're going, Vinny. I mean, like with any movement, you need an army. You don't need martyrs or heroes. So it's all about community, helping each other, knowing our circumstance, knowing that we're in the same boat, knowing that we're all cattle. So think of the lessons that nature, teaches us. We're going up against a big animal. Just all unite.
Yeah, ancient tribes used to take down mammoths by working together, didn't they? And boy, do we have one gargantuan mammoth of a conspiracy going on here. And I don't know, need some gaffy sticks and bantha tracks, you know, the sand people and all of that kind of stuff. It's all swirling around. It's coming to a head. You know, the stormtroopers are on their way to your house, bro. Okay, that's what's really kind of freaking me out nowadays. Is I'm just wondering, you know, how close are we to the edge? Because I know they're planning to collapse the economy. I know they're planning to exterminate all of us. I know they're planning to destroy the sovereignty of our countries and form us into a one world government. And what I find really interesting is that people, instead of doing something about it when they know the projected agenda, they sit back and listen to radio shows like this and call in and ask questions like, oh, but when do you think this is going to happen? It's already fracking happening, step by fracking step. And every single time that you sit back and do nothing and ask when something's going to happen, you are wasting possible resistance moments.
Absolutely. And I get a lot of flack on the internet about, well, we already know that they're surveilling us. This is not news. Yes, it is, because somebody stepped out and said something. More people need to step out and say something. There are people who know things. There are people who have documents. They need to feel comfortable enough to come out and say something, because the more people that can say something, that work in these industries, that can blow whistles on what's going on, then we can shut this down. They work in the shadows, so let's shine a light on them. I mean, it's really that simple.
Shut it down. Shut it down.
A lot of people are scared about, you know, destroying their character. I catch the tube here in London, and I sometimes, you know, because I'm a very snoopy person, I sometimes overhear people talking exactly about this, but they whisper it to each other, you know, that sort of thing, because they're afraid of what people are going to perceive them. But I think everyone's thinking the same thing, but it's just that whole idea of destroying your character, because no one wants to be on the losing team.
Can I ask you, Ralph? What makes you think that your character's not destroyed already if you won't speak up about what you know to be right?
And people, exactly. I mean, people latch themselves into the wrong role models as well. Like, stop looking at politicians. I overheard a banker today talking to another banker saying, you know, the most important thing is perception. The most important thing is putting politicians out there. They have personality. People buy into personality. It's all a facade. So you're looking at the wrong role models, and they're not in it for you either. So
it's trees by their fruit. You know, you have a look at what people are saying, and then have a look at what people are doing, and then you'll soon notice who's real from who's full of crap. And what I've found is very, very sad, is that there's so many people in this movement that are totally full of crap. right? And I feel guilty saying that, and I think that people will get angry for me saying that, but I have to say it because it's the truth. There's lots of people out there in this movement who are just straight up lying to all of you about dang near everything that they're covering. Whether or not they're doing it deliberately, or they're just foolish, or they're full of their own egos, or something like that. And some people keep, even after they realize that this person's a complete deceiver, keep listening to them. What is that?
There are two types of people. There are farmers and there are sheep. So there are people out there that look to their peers and they look to see what's cool. So, you know, conspiracy is not cool. Conspiracy is not real. So there's sheep. And, you know, you'll never change that. There will always be those sort of people. But we need to concentrate on creating more farmers. And because if you have enough of them, everything else will follow. So people have to look within themselves and decide who they are. Are they a sheep or a farmer?
Are you a sheep or a wolf?
Wolf. That's the one.
Wolf. And it'd take a wolf to catch a wolf. You know what I'm saying?
You've also got decades and decades of programming where we're taught to be consumers. We're taught to believe that what we have defines who we are, and it's generational. And so that's what creates the sheep. Generation after generation being programmed to think that you're nothing without a house with two garages in it and cars you can't afford and clothing you can't afford, and you're always going out and buying something. That's the society we live in, not just in the United States, but all over the world. And that's the ideology that we're fighting up against. It's the people who decide that they're not going to let what they don't have or what they do have define who they are. Those people need to stand up and remind the other people that they exist, whether or not they have these little sheets of paper that only have value because some idiot, some technocratic idiot or psychopath decided that it has this sort of value to it. Nothing means anything unless somebody else says it does. So that means that nothing means anything unless you say it does. And if you say it doesn't have any value, then it doesn't have any value.
Yeah. What really I find really ironic is the people who are afraid of getting killed or demonized by coming out and speaking about the truth. Dude, they're going to kill you anyway. What the hell are you? What have you got to lose?
Absolutely. I've been demonized a lot in the last year that I've been out. I've even had professors take the letters in my name and reword them to create different words and somehow say that my name has been made up and that I'm not a real person and that this is proof. Professors who are teaching students in colleges are doing this on the side and then posting this on their websites. So there's a lot involved here.
Oh, they're totally contributing to positiveness and humanity, aren't they?
Absolutely. But that doesn't stop me from doing what I'm doing. I'm still writing articles and publishing every day and going on the radio. That's not going to stop me. I have two children at home. I have a responsibility.
They're not going to outright kill you either. You know, that's just going to create too much of a scene. They're just going to do it really low-key. They're just going to starve you. So they're going to cut your lifeline and starve you. But, you know, people need to wake up and realize this. And here's the thing, though, and I agree with you guys. It's ingrained right from the word go to act like a sheep, because that's what they want you to be. They want you to be cattle. They promote the sort of we've all had those sort of managers at work, right, where they're just outright psychopaths. They do that on purpose. They promote those sort of people to those high levels. And anyone that sort of thinks outside the square or thinks logically, they demonize them. So, you know, it's a real hard game that we're playing, but as long as you're aware that the game is going on, that's when you start changing the path of it all. But I do agree with you. It's ingrained right from the word go to act like sheep. And so this is why you can't blame people. This is the mentality that they've all grown up with.
I wonder how difficult it would be to convince a classroom that they shouldn't obey their teacher because their teacher's probably wrong, and how difficult it would be for that teacher to maintain control of the classroom after they've learned that.
That's why they come up with ADHD and all these other problems that kids have when the children. This was decided very, very early on when Ford and Carnegie got what's his name? Oh my God, Edward Bernays into the school system to decide to teach them how to propagandize to the students, and actually taught teachers in colleges these methodologies to control the students. And what they do is they separate the students that are willing to comply automatically from the students who won't. And it's come to the point where the students who won't comply now have a mental disorder, and they are not allowed to be in class, or they're not allowed to be in the school at all unless they're on some sort of mood stabilizer or psychotropic drug. That's
which, incidentally,
how they're dealing with it.
Which incidentally makes the kids go crazy and shoot up the school. We'll be right back after the break at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. I love that song, you know, nowhere to run, nowhere to hide. It kind of reminds me that just how true that saying is, but of course it's misinterpreted. That song's about love, and my interpretation is about the New World Order. Why do they call it a New World Order? You know, I see people escaping to other countries, you know, leaving the United States, coming to New Zealand in order to escape the New World Order, only to discover that New Zealand's just as deep in the thick of it as the rest of the world. People were leaving England to go to Russia or something like that to escape the New World Order. Then they realise that the New World Order's here too, in the form of $1 per litre of liquor. My very special guests are Ralph Engel from thisflighttonight.com and Suzanne Posel from OccupyCorporatism.com, and not to mention RealGorillaMedia.com, where we have contributors from a number of different fields around the annals of truth. That's annals with two N, you dirty people out there. And we try to give them a bit of a platform because it needs to be done. Look, this is something that I noticed. And maybe you two will agree with me, but maybe you won't. But the whole problem with media, even alternative media, is centralization, right? That's the real problem, I think, is one person being up on the top and being in control, and everybody else having to do what they say and cover what they have to cover and that kind of thing. It has the benefit of having much wider audiences, but it has the downside of having a centralized decision-making, which means less diversity. And what the real guerrilla media is about is using that same centralization model but flipped on its head, so that we bring all these different contributors to a central platform and tell them, you can write whatever you want to write, okay? And just be honest and just be decent about it and contribute, so that anytime people go to therealguerrillamedia.com, they can see a number of different articles on a number of different causes from a number of different contributors, all of which are putting their stuff there voluntarily. That's all we're there to do, is help you get your own little message out. So if you want to be a contributor and you've already got your own website, preferably, and your own following, your own radio shows, we want multimedia activists, people who do articles, radio and video. And if you're only just doing one of each, that's fine too. And we're going to try and get you some donations from these very important people, the reason for our existence, the audiences. It's very well enough that we come out and we contribute, produce content, thing of that, other fellow activists, but sometimes we don't pay enough homage to our audiences who sit there day after day listening, reading, and watching and supporting people like us who otherwise would not be able to survive, in a lot of cases, literally, without that help. We just want to extend a little bit of that help out to the contributors from realguerrillamedia.com. So there's a little plug there. Also, I'm having a bit of a financial crisis myself. So if you can go to the vinnyeastwoodshow.com, subscribe for as little as $1 a month, or give me some kind of a massive cash injection, it would kind of be really, really beneficial right about now. There's a reason why I'm so stressed out and so tired and forgetting to even have coffee before a show. Financial stress. It's bad. And there is only one source of income that I can guarantee does not connote scumbaggery. And that's honest, decent, generous listeners to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. And thank you so much for your support already. Some people have actually turned up at my house and just given me cash. You know, people go out of their way to support me, and I'm just so intensely grateful for that. Honestly, every single thing that I have, bro, is donated or given to me by somebody who's generous. Right, I know what it's like to live under the protection and the provision of others. It's like everybody's my pseudo mum and dad. Almost come freaking handout for an allowance. I don't know. Maybe that's bad.
Give cash to Vinny while you can before we become a cashless society.
Yeah.
Maybe you should start busking, bro.
I'd have to get up really early on Saturday mornings and go to the markets and stuff like that out Takapuna ways, bro. That's where my mate goes busking. I don't know. It'd be good. We could bust together. But yeah, there's got to be more ways of making money than.
Yeah.
Hello, Vinny.
Your audio's clipped out, Vinny.
Hey, before you even think about giving something to the Vinny Eastwood Show, okay? Take care of yourself and your family first. That's more important.
Sorry, that must have been completely deep and meaningful, but the audio was gone on my end. I'm not sure about you there.
Is it back now?
It's yeah, you're back.
Okay, sorry.
It sounded like you were saying something really deep and meaningful, though.
So. Well, what I was saying is if people are going to donate to the Vinny Eastwood Show and you haven't taken care of yourself yet, you haven't taken care of your family, you don't have all your bills paid, stuff like that, don't donate to me, okay? Take care of yourself and you take care of your family. You take care of your bills first before you even think about starting to support anybody else. If you can't help yourself, how are you going to help me, all right? Honestly, make your own situation better before you start helping other people, even if you know you're listening to me all the time. You know, and you feel guilty because you're listening. That's what I get. I get emails from people who feel guilty about donating me money. They say, Vinny, here's $20. I wish I could give more, but I was so broke. And it's just like, are you kidding me? You just gave me $20 of your hard-earned cash that you probably can't afford. You have any idea how grateful I am for that?
It's
already? Thank you.
It's a war zone out there. It's a chess game. So absolutely, you got to look after yourself first. And I totally agree with you, Vinny, because as you know, I try and donate as much as possible, but every now and then I just absolutely can't. But it's a war zone. You absolutely support what you believe in, but at the same time, you know, you might have to retreat every now and then. But you know, as long as you're there for the long run, and you're doing something every day. It might not be, you know, giving you cash directly, but it might be doing something else, like speaking out or being a guest in the show. You know, that's my personal input on that. But yeah, absolutely. Anyone that's out there, I mean, $1 a month is not a lot. but it does keep shows like this on air, and it's absolutely valuable as a platform. So get on PayPal, everybody. Donate what you can, if possible. If not today, next week, next month. Keep it in mind.
Thanks for that, bro.
Has Andy been quiet there in the corner? Was it the dirty conversation that we had over the break about Michael Douglas's throat cancer through the use of cunnilingus?
I think it was. I was just so, you know, I'm still so shocked about, you know, Angelina Jolie chopping off her breasts and everybody doing that and more celebrities coming out, and then Michael Douglas blames oral sex for his throat cancer. And I'm thinking, what is going on with Catherine Zeta-Jones? But then I'm thinking, who prompted him to say something that ridiculous? I mean, he's had a very good career. He comes from good stock, you know? What made him think that? I mean, what kind of drugs do they have him on that he would make such a ridiculous statement?
I don't know. I think once you get older in this society, people start trying to push medication on you. And before you know it, you've got ridiculous amounts of medication that you've got to deal with, that a wee bit of good diet and exercise would basically wean you off.
I was just writing an article before I came on the show about the bees. And there's university, the Washington State University, is now taking bee sperm and storing it and genetically modifying the bees that we have now with the bee sperm. And they actually had a picture of someone extracting the sperm from the bee. And I'm absolutely, yes, I'm just appalled and shocked at all of this stuff that's going on with genetics. And why are they taking the bee sperm?
I wonder what a bee sounds like when he gets up.
But that's like,
you know, you're like this erotic buzzing warehouse where they're extracting the juicy honeydew jism from these honeybees. That's freaking disgusting. All right. Okay. What are they doing with this again? Are they rubbing it on their face?
No, what they're doing...
Do they not have a man partner that can do this for them? No.
What they're doing is they're getting from Europe bee sperm sent over here, and they're worried about testing it for viruses, and so that they can go ahead and genetically modify all the bees, because the bees are dying.
Yeah, bees are dying, and I'm sure that has absolutely nothing to do with the huge amount of pesticides that the people who are planning on genetically modifying the bees have put into the environment, which has killed them all, because every time they touch a plant, they get Roundup ready to die. So, that's another good show, ladies and gentlemen. Sorry if I've been a little bit not with it. And I'm apologizing for it. I'm doing a good job here. Gosh dang it. Should be proud of it. Not feel guilty because I'm not doing enough. Nobody is. Nobody's doing enough. You know how you know that you're not doing enough? Because all these problems that you're fighting against aren't solved yet. Ralph Engel from thisfighttonight.com and Suzanne Posel from OccupyCorporatism.com and RealGorillaMedia.com. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for your time, and we'll see you again. Another one.